Live from EverBank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, here we go. Happy Tuesday to you folks. I don't know how happy it is, being a Jaguar fan, but you're on the right side of the dirt, as I like to say from time to time. Tony, the older I get, I find the more that's a thing to look forward to. Waking up every morning, 46 years old. I might have just made the turn. I'm hoping I just made the turn in life, and I can make it to 92.
What turn are you talking about?
I'd like to be on the tenth hole of my life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, 46, yeah, brother. My dad lived till he was 60.
I'm young enough. Right? You said right side of the dirt. I was like, what's he talking
no,
about?
I'm
they're
talking
one
about,
in five.
Oh,
like,
you're
I was you, like, they're one in five. Right side of what?
You're up. You're not Jaguars
focused.
He's talking about himself.
I'm talking about life. I'm talking about being happy.
The old saying, any day above ground is a good day.
That's what they say. It beats the alternative. All right. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. All right, Logs, you did obviously eyeball the all 22 yesterday. I want to start with the quarterback position. All right. Because I think Blake Bortles, to me, is if there's one primary reason for hope for this football team, it's embodied in Blake Bortles.
Okay? Absolutely.
Hasn't been perfect, obviously. Consistency week to week, it's sometimes been missing. I get it. He's a young quarterback, but what can he do to eliminate some of, you know, playing so well for so many stretches and then just making bad decisions or missing guy. You know what I mean? How can he become a more consistent down in, down out quarterback and avoid the big mistakes like throwing the pick before the end of the first half?
I think a lot of it has to do with maturing. Consistency has a lot to do with repetitions. And I think also that, you know, when you're 1-4, you know, going into the game this past weekend, you sometimes have the idea that I need to do more.
Is that what Gus is talking about? I mean, Gus says these young guys, some of them are pressing right now.
You know, and I know that if you asked Blake, you'd probably say that, hey, look, I'm not trying to do that, but it's human nature. I mean, you're the quarterback, and you want to be able to do more. You know, you go to Tampa Bay, and he has such a wonderful game. Was he throw four touchdown passes at Tampa Bay, and it wasn't good enough. And so the next week is, you know, which is a good trait to have that in the field that you need to do more. And sometimes as a quarterback, it's not necessarily needing to do more, but maybe just a little bit more, you know, instead of feeling like you've got to go ahead and take a big bite. And I think that in some cases he tried to take a big bite. You know, he had Julius Thomas in the Tampa Bay game where he had him open a couple times and he didn't find him. And all of a sudden now he comes back and Julius Thomas, it's game two. He's like, okay, hey, Julius was open the week before in Tampa Bay. I got to get him the ball. Well, two of the three interceptions that he throws are targeted for Julius Thomas. So, you know, and you go back to, I think, the beginning of the season when the tight ends weren't really a focal point of the offense, and a lot of the conversation and the speak was, we have to get the tight ends more involved. Well, they kept trying and kept trying and kept trying. It wasn't working. And I think a lot of times the conversation needs to be, we just need to get the ball to whoever's open. I think that's what makes quarterbacks that are playing at a high level really good, like Tom Brady. Tom Brady doesn't give a crap if he's throwing to Julian Edelman or Deion Lewis or anybody. He just wants to throw the ball to somebody that's open, and I think that needs to be more of what's coming into his ears more than anything. But I think a lot of times it's not necessarily coming into his ears. It may be just coming into his mind. That Julius Thomas, playmaker, game two, missed him open last week. I'm going to find him this week. Now, he just needs to calm down and focus in on the things that he can control, because the one ball that he threw before the half misread. You had a guy over the top. You had a guy underneath.
You're talking about the pick?
The interception.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the 1 yard line, which the guy ended up rolling out to about the three, and they were able to take a knee, and you didn't get any points out of that. And then the pick six. You know, I think that is more of a matter of a miscommunication. You got two players that haven't worked together a ton. They worked together enough to know better than that. And I think Blake was at fault for two reasons on that. One, in that the ball was so hot, so quick, before Julius even had an opportunity to get turned around. Number two, I mean, it was a fastball. You know, it's a fastball. It's like trying to be a hitter, hitting the ball. You know, Julius Thomas is the hitter, and all of a sudden you got a major league pitcher throwing from the little league mound.
Right.
You know what I mean? You got to slow it down a little bit. So, a little bit, it's probably pressing a little bit, but you also understand some of that, and that he wants to do more, and it's also the conditions of the game, and that you're down, you know, points, and you need to start pressing. You need to start pushing the issue in the envelope a little bit.
Did they do anything, the Texans, to take Allen Hurns away, or was this just a case you think the game plan was to try to get some other guys going, and they obviously got Julius Thomas heavily involved, even on the passes that missed him off target.
We probably wouldn't even be having this conversation if Blake finds him on that first series of the second half.
The big one down
the
field.
And I showed it last night on Jaguars All Access. You know, as a quarterback, you got J.J. Watt out there, and he's, you know, kind of in your face a little bit. It wasn't immediate in Blake Bortles' face, and that wasn't the reason why he disrupted his view. But, I mean, seeing that guy, I think that play was – and I was watching that play on film, and I'm trying to figure out what the intent was. You know, because the way Blake, he rolled out, and it was kind of a half roll, and a half roll typically targets, you know, the wide receivers on the side of the half roll. And he planted his foot and was looking to the back side of the field to where Allen Robinson was, but Allen Robinson wasn't really doing any type of a double move that would indicate that that's where the primary
where the setup
was, you know.
Yeah.
So, and Allen Hurns, I thought, did a great adjustment. I don't think that the route was supposed to be by Allen Hurns to be a go route, but Allen Hurns saw that the corner squatted, and there was no safety over the top, and he goes straight and puts his hand up, hoping that his quarterback sees it. And Blake, right at that time that he decides to go vertical, Blake turns his attention back to throw back to Allen Robinson on the far side of the field. And I don't know why that happened.
Is this one of the things to me, and now I'm not watching the All-22 like you every week, but that to me is one of the things that stood out really particularly the last couple weeks. Guys running open, Blake has not seen him. Has that been an issue ongoing with him this year more so than you'd expect for a quarterback at this stage of his development?
No, I think it's probably typical, but you know, then at the same time, you know, Julius Thomas's touchdown, he was running wide open and he finds him.
Sure.
You know, so it's happening, but you want it to happen more often. Certainly and throughout the rest of the game and other games. But I don't think that that's a trait or a trend with Blake Bortles. But I think also part of that has to do with just the maturity, calming things down, and just executing instead of maybe sometimes pressing. And I use that word pressing or trying to do too much because that's an easy human reaction when you're 1-4 at that point, you know, because you want to do more.
Twitter's waiting for me to say something, so let me just get this out of the way. Paying customer. Just wanted to say it once and just get, and move past it, because I really don't think, as much as it may sound like it on the air, I don't think Jeff is going to physically attack me, but that was kind of the litmus test.
Well, not right now.
Not yet. Right? He's got a counter. He just marked a little one on his paper there, Tony.
Right.
So,
while we're talking about Blake, though, Jeff, I did want to ask you, because it feels like, especially this past week, how do you feel like he's handling the pocket right now? His escapability is great, and it extends plays and allows things to happen downfield. Is he getting out a little bit too early at times?
I think at times he is. But I think that's natural when you're playing a team like the Houston Texans and they have J.J. Watt.
And you're coming off a game you just got sacked six times.
Yeah, but
well,
you know, most of that was kind of late in the game. The protection for the most part against Tampa Bay early in that game was good. And then all of a sudden when the Bucs get up and they're pinning the ears back, all of a sudden it was, you know, it was an onslaught, which it should be. I mean, when you get a high lead and you've got pass rushers that are capable, I mean, that's a huge advantage for the opponent. But Blake's got to calm down a little bit. That goes back to calming down. You know, calming down, let the game come to you, and just let it happen naturally instead of trying to force things to happen. But with number 99 on the other side, who I thought the Jaguars, for the most part, did a pretty good job against him, whether it been Jeremy Parnell, A.J. Cann had one holding on him, but I think he did okay in some other situations. Luke Jokel, I thought, did a very good job against J.J. Watt. He had the one that he gave up to Whitney Mercilus that wasn't very pretty. But I think overall they did a good enough job up front in pass protection, but they've got to get better in run blocking.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about a bunch of things that they need to either improve on or things that they're doing well after a look at the film over the last couple of days. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. Your Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day asks you, through the first six games, which position group on the Jags needs the most improvement? We've had a groundswell for a particular one, but you weigh in with your thoughts on that on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Logs56, LOGS56, also on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Phone lines open for you throughout the next 2 hours at 641-1010. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, 904-641-1010. If you happen to be outside the 904 area code, just add that area code and you'll get right through on that. We'll get to all your feedback coming up a little bit later on. We'll also hear from Gus Bradley, his Monday press conference, with a chance to evaluate what went down on Sunday and put some thought to it. We'll hear those thoughts coming up shortly as well. You can be a part of it. 641-1010 is the number. Pick up the phone. It's Jaguars Today on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Jaguars Today on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you. If you like to get on board today, 641-1010 is the phone number. Logs, what was the most, just for this week, the question we asked today was about which position group needs the most improvement. What was the most disappointing thing, whether it was a position group or an area of performance that fell flat for you? What bothered you the most about the loss to Houston?
Well, I think you go back the last 3 weeks, it's the defensive front. You know, I'm talking about the front four. You know, you had a great opportunity against Indianapolis to where they had an offensive line that had been shuffled, that hadn't been performing very well. You were healthy for the most part. You had everybody in the lineup with the exception of Sendarek Marks, and at that point Andre Branch was coming with his first game back, but you weren't able to affect Matt Hasselbeck. Against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, Doug Martin racks up what, like 120-something yards rushing. I think they had 180 overall. You know, and you always say it starts up front. And then this past week against the Houston Texans, Brian Hoyer was relatively comfortable in the pocket. I think that on the touchdown pass to DeAndre Hopkins of 9 yards, it was about 4 seconds, you know, 3.8 seconds, something like that. And as a pass rusher, you know, your mark is 3.0. And then you had a 3rd and 13 where it was like 5 seconds. You know, it's just too much. It's just too much. And you know, you're getting third down opportunities. And you're dead last in the league on third down conversion rate allowed at 50% because you're not getting home. You're not getting free. And it's clear right now that that's the part of the defense that needs to perform better consistently week in and week out, because there's a couple reasons I say that. One, you spend some money in free agency in Jared Odrick. You have Chris Clemens, who was brought back, and they've kind of brought him along to where he's practicing only occasionally to maximize, you know, his production. You drafted Dante Fowler. I know he's not available, but still, you didn't have Dante Fowler last year. You know, Sendarek Marks is not what he was last year, nor do I expect him to be what he was last year, but you still have to be able to get production out of that group. And it's whether it's the four guys that are coming, or you find a different four guys that are going to be coming. And I've been saying this for a while, and that Ryan Davis needs to get more snaps. You know, I think he's averaging 16, 17 snaps a game. Why not more?
Gus says it's because of his role on special teams.
I don't care.
I'm not arguing with you.
Argue, Mike.
You want to? I'm ready to go at the drop of a hat, quite honestly.
My point is that if his production is there, why not more? And I know that they're saying, well, he plays special teams. Well, then find somebody else to play special teams, or let him do both. There's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of guys that have to do both. Robert Mathis, when he was a young player, he had to play special teams, and he was getting snaps as a defensive lineman. Why not Ryan Davis? I don't understand that part.
What? How did Devon House play? I thought the first half, I thought he might have been the best Jag on the field.
Yeah, right? I thought he was really good the first three quarters. The touchdown pass to where that was like around the 3.8 seconds, 4.0, even though it was long, He let space kind of appear in the back of that end zone. Wasn't great. The long ball touchdown, what was that, like 26 yards, something like that,
yeah.
That range. He's got to be better than that. DeAndre Hopkins, who, look, give him credit. I mean, he's an excellent player. And I think the Houston Texans did a great job. And a lot of people say, well, they must have done something at halftime to change what they were going to do. No, they didn't. They probably went in there at halftime and said, look, we're getting single coverage on DeAndre in this entire first half, and we're trying, and we've missed some. We're going to stay with that because eventually we feel confident in our guy that it's going to happen. And I think I give them credit because they didn't, in the quarterback credit, because they didn't turn away from it. They didn't shy away from the opportunity. They kept trying it, and eventually it worked. Now, on the long ball, The one thing that I'm sitting there kind of shaking my head at a little bit is that you got a single high safety who's a deep middle field. And look, when you're a cornerback, you're on an island. Okay. But if you're the safety and you've got a tight end and a running back on the other side of the field and you've got DeAndre Hopkins on the other side of the field, which side are you going to be leaning to? I'm not saying that it could have impacted the play, but I think it certainly could have maybe had a chance at impacting the play.
Who was it?
I think it was Josh Evans, I think. You know, and his responsibility is deep center field. But if I'm deep center field, I'm going to be deep center right.
You're not going to worry about C.J. Fedorowicz, you're telling me, as much as DeAndre Hopkins?
Right.
All right, let's get some calls going here. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in. We'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up shortly. We'll start with Nick on the north side. Nick, you're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Hey, a comment about the franchise in general and then a couple of comments about Blake Bortles. I realize the natives are restless, but talk of removing Bradley or Caldwell is nonsense. You don't know what you got here. You spent 2.5 years building this thing, and then you're going to blow it up. That makes no sense. Now, what you could do for the fans in the meanwhile is start chucking the ball around and get in some track meets with these teams. You know, and if you're losing games 42-35 or, you know, 35-30 and stuff like that, yeah, they're losing, but, you know, that's going to bring some excitement to the fan base. About Blake Bortles, two things. The first thing is in the Miami game, when he took off and it was about 5 minutes left before halftime, he took off and scrambled for about 12 yards and got a first down. And it seemed like the entire tenor of the game changed at that point. It's almost as if he's got to get on the move early on in game to get his rhythm going. The second thing about Bortles for this weekend against Buffalo, some of the throws that he completed last week, these sort of back shoulder things where the receiver stops, turns around, jumps, fights for the ball. You know, that's going to work for a while, but I know that Sexy Rexy is up there watching tape from last week, and he's going to be telling those defensive backs to try to keep, you know, turn around and face the quarterback, and there's some interception opportunities there. I'll take your comments off here.
Well, I mean, as far as Blake, you know, just the scrambling stuff, I mean, that's part of his game. He did it this past week. You know, he didn't wait to do it to try to get things going. I mean, he took it when it was there. I think there were some instances where I didn't want to see him leave the pocket. That, you know, he should have stayed in the pocket, and then he had some options down the field. As far as Rex catching on to the back shoulder throws, and that's only going to work for a little while, it works all the time. I mean, that's not something that just goes away. The back shoulder is there because they're playing too far over the top. If they start playing the back shoulder, then you go over the top.
Right.
I mean, that's what they call, you know, a one-on-one opportunity. And when a defensive back has got his head turned and he's not facing the quarterback, you have to take advantage of it. And you have to locate the ball where it's going to give the wide receiver the best opportunity, whether it be back shoulder or over the top. That's not going to go away just because it's been seen on film. Because the other option is the counter to that, and that's over the top.
Right. I mean, the back shoulder is throughout the National Football League. Mm-hmm. It's not like that. People are just going to wake up one day and say, wait a minute, people are throwing a lot of back shoulder throws.
No.
Like
no,
you said.
That's not
going
to change.
You've got to, as an offense and as a quarterback, you got to recognize when they're overplaying that, obviously, and take advantage of that. But that's a staple in the NFL.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think it started kind of as respect for the deep speed that guys brought to the table. And you, as a cornerback, you got a guy that can go by you. And you got to turn and run with him, man. I mean, the back shoulder is not usually going to lead to a 60-yard touchdown. If you play and bite too often on that short one, you're going to get beat over the top for some of those long ones.
Sure, sure. I mean, that's never going to go away.
All right, let's get that
opportunity will always be there.
Let's go to John in St. Augustine next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on. Jeff had a question with the amount of defense getting to the quarterback, the line. They be changing up the scheme a little bit more, do some more safety blitzes and corner blitzes. I know they're playing a lot of man now. I'll take it off the air.
Yeah, well, I mean, Gus talked about in his press conference about bringing more pressure, and that's something that they have to look at doing. You know, it is a trade-off. You know, you bring one extra guy, you got one less guy in coverage. And so in a perfect world, you'd like to be able to do with what some of the great pass-rushing teams do in the league, and that's bring four and only four. But there's different ways to accomplish pressure. You know, you can bring a zone dog. A zone dog is still bringing four, but you're dropping one of the defensive linemen. You can bring a zone blitz, which is bringing all four of your defensive linemen and one extra, but that's when you get into the case where you're playing cover one or man coverage, and all of a sudden you have one less guy in coverage. So, I mean, so there's different options, and they've got to be able to find a comfort zone, okay, and a balance to where they can accomplish their goal, which is trying to pressure the quarterback, but at the same time also not giving up huge plays on the in the secondary. And I think that this secondary is capable of handling some of that. I think more so than the percentage that they have called. And I think that they need to be a little bit more creative when they send pressure of changing the looks up to where the opponent is not prepared for it. And that's not easy to do. You know, you have, sometimes you got to self-scout. And then when you self-scout, you say, okay, well, we brought, you know, the auto on six plays in the last 2 weeks. And let's just use throwing out a number. It's probably more than that. So let's say we bring them six plays, and those six times we brought them the same way every time. Well, let's change it up. Let's bring the auto again and play the same thing on the back end, but attack the front differently to where the auto's not coming on the same track. Send the auto a different, whether he's stunting with a defensive lineman, or instead of maybe sending the auto the same blitz and the auto covers somebody else's responsibility, maybe it's a safety coming. You know, so there are ways to accomplish that. But that's the hard part in that, you know, the foundation of this defense is built on a four-man rush. But that foundation sometimes has to be changed when the four-man rush is not accomplishing what your objective is. And right now, they're not.
We've got Gus Bradley talking about pressure and the lack thereof and what his concerns are with that. This is what he had to say yesterday.
There's a couple things. One, you know, what it can do as far as, you know, we play man coverage and we play zone pressures. So some of our man pressures are effective, some of our zone are pressure. The two that I told you were both zone pressures. Two times, 28 yards. We ran three other zone pressures. We had a sack and 0 yards and 0 yards. So, I mean, there's different obstacles that come up depending on what you're sending, who you're sending. So that's first and foremost. But what it can be is you're hoping that it gets out tight. If they pick up the pressure, you got one less guy in coverage.
Obviously. I mean, that's the trade-off. But you got to, if you get there, that's what you're hoping.
That's why I say you have to be a little creative sometimes. And that you, when you do send that extra guy as a rusher, is to not give the same look week in and week out to where the opponent is like, up, here it comes. You know, where you're tipping it off, number one, and then when they anticipate it, they're assuming exactly how it's going to look when it does come. And so changing it up sometimes is obviously important because of the scouting that the opponent does on you.
All right, we got to take a timeout at bottom of the hour here, 641-1010, if you'd like to get in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line or on the phones. We'll hear more from Gus Bradley coming up his Monday press conference with Jeff Loggeman, with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Tuesday's brought to you by the law offices of Kenny Way and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I think there was, I could state some occasions where I felt that, you know, three or four, but overall I didn't see too much of that. I just didn't feel like we made the plays, when some guys, when their number was called.
That's Gus Bradley asked yesterday if he still feels that the team is pressing. That was his response to that. We'll hear a little bit more from Gus coming up here momentarily. Got phone lines open to you right now at 641-1010. Jaguars Today on a Tuesday. Brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, and Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. What time are you guys wheels up on Thursday?
Yeah, I don't know. I have to look at the schedule. Sometime Thursday afternoon.
Thursday afternoon? Is that what it is? And you guys get in, I guess, Friday early?
Yeah, morning, yeah. I think 7, 8, 9 in the morning, something
walk
like
through
that.
On Friday for the guys, is that kind of...
Yeah, I think that's been pretty standard procedure for them anyway, practice-wise, is that, you know, taxiing practices Wednesday, Thursday, more of a walkthrough on Friday. You know, and I like the schedule change-up. You know, the last couple years, you know, 2 years ago, you ended up departing on a Monday after a home game. And then you had all week out there. And then last year you departed after the Cincinnati Bengals game and you spent all week out there. And I think what that does is have a tendency to make it more like a vacation instead of a business trip. I like the idea of going out Thursday. I know that there's different events that the team has going on and the player exposure is limited to that. so it has the feel of more of a business trip, and that's what it should be like. But I also understand the flip side of that, and that when you do go over there for the week, you know, it's about building the fan base and,
right,
and making your presence felt over there in that market as part of this commitment.
Yeah, that's one of the things they did. I guess it was that first Monday, right? They had a little, kind of like a walkthrough on that Monday, I want to say, and they invited big contingent of
from the Jaguars, UK
fans,
guys,
like the Union Jacks group over there. Give my regards to them when you see them.
It's disappointing, you know, that they're not going to be able to have some of that going on. But at the same time, this team's got bigger things to worry about.
They need
right
to win
now.
Some games. 641-1010, Brian in East Arlington next up here on 1010XL. Hi, Brian.
What's going on, guys?
What's up?
I wanted to ask Jeff about the special teams. Before I do, I want to make a disclaimer. I'm not saying I want Scobie back. I'm not saying that cutting Scobie was the wrong – I mean, trading Scobie was the wrong thing. But what do you think, Jeff, we should do about this kicker we have? I mean, he's missed game-winning field goals. This is the second extra point he's missed. You take a team like New Orleans and Pittsburgh, they made mistakes with kickers. They've already got rid of them and brought in other guys. Why are we sitting here delaying what needs to be inevitable, what needs to be done?
Well, I think the reason that they're doing that is, you know, comparing it to another team, is that another team has a guy, have had guys that are veterans that have had opportunities to do it before. And so when the production is not there, you change it out and you go with someone else, whereas you have a young guy that, look, I'll be the first to tell you, because I was one who was talking about it during the scrimmage, that there's a legitimate competition going on here. Because Jason Myers, throughout the entire offseason, the OTAs and training camp, was unbelievable. I mean, probably the best display of kicking in the offseason and through the preseason of a young player that I have ever seen. He's got an incredibly strong leg. And I think when you see that upside and you've seen it for so long, you have a tendency to be a little bit more patient. And I understand that. But that patience also only extends so far. So he's got a little bit more of a pass than maybe a veteran guy who's done it for 8-9 years or whatever. But at some point there is a line too that Jason Myers needs to make sure that when he steps across it, his production is at a certain level.
How close are they to that line, or do you just know it when you see it?
I don't think they're there yet. I mean, he's had, what, two missed extra points. He's missed two game winners in one game, you know, but he's still displaying an incredibly long leg for his field goal tries. I mean, the misses that he had in Indianapolis, you know, probably could have been good if they were straight, you know, from 60 plus yards.
Distance.
You know, so there is patience there, but it's not like it's a scholarship that lasts forever, you know, so. And the only one who knows how long that patience is going to be General Manager Dave Caldwell. You know, but when you commit, as you said, we're going to be patient, you have to be patient.
All right, let's get back to it. 641-1010. Gary, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, Jeff, as a Dolphins fan, and Mike, I watched how Dan Campbell transformed the Dolphins in just 2 weeks at the helm. He played with a lot of emotion. To me, football is a game of emotion. I'm not questioning Gus Bradley's X's and O's knowledge. It's, you know, 10 times more than I'll ever know. But the fact, I don't see enough Jags playing as if their hair's on fire. Playing, to me, football game is a game played with emotions. And I see a lot of guys that seem to be just going through the motions the way the Dolphins were before Campbell took over. Same personnel. They look like a totally different football team on Sunday. And I'll hang up and listen, Jeff.
Yeah, and I think what Dan Campbell did in one game was tremendous. You know, I think let's wait and see what happens from now on. You know, a lot of times when you have a change like that, is it going to be lasting? Is it going to be able to carry on into, instead of being a one trick pony, is this going to be a pattern? Is this going to be consistent with Dan Campbell? You know, and, you know, congratulations to him. He's done a great job. He did a great job with that Miami Dolphins team in 1 week, but at the same time, it's been 1 week. We'll see how it ends up.
All right. That's the number out there, 641-1010. We don't know how it's going to hold up. Certainly got the best out of them that we've seen from them this year.
Yeah, and, you know, when you roll in and okay, we're going to be tougher, I get that. And I appreciate that because, you know, that's what football is all about, is about forming a culture of toughness, mental toughness, et cetera. But I don't know if he's going to be the answer. Maybe he is. Maybe he isn't. You know, and the comment, you know, want the players to play with their hair on fire. I appreciate that comment, and I agree with that comment. And I think their hair on fire, I think, can mean a couple different things. I think they're playing hard, and I don't think there's any lack of effort, but I think they need to play with more of a sense of urgency. And that it's not just the effort that you play with, but it's the effort, it's the awareness, it's everything that you play with. That has to be better.
All right, let's get Mike on the south side. Then we'll hear from Gus Bradley immediately after. Mike, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Good. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, do you think it was a good idea to have Devon House in single coverage with Hopkins the whole game? I understand Devon House is playing decent, but up until a point where we were winning, you knew they were going to turn up a little bit as far as their play, so you knew Hopkins was going to get a bigger load. Shouldn't you think Gus should have said, okay, we're going to give Devon some help? So, because Hopkins is going to up his play, and let's give Devon House some help, even for a half a quarter, half of a half or something, you know, like any kind of alternative to single coverage when, yeah, he was getting open. I mean, he was doing good coverage, but the man was catching passes with his helmet at that point. You know, like, shouldn't you at least got him some help?
Which is freaky. I mean, some of those catches were just unbelievable. I mean, the one that he pinned on top of his helmet, I mean, that's like SportsCenter top plays of the week. You know, could they and should they have maybe given Devon House some more help? At times, I think they probably should have. And I think there's two philosophies when you play a great player like that. Is that if you have a great player, you put that great player on him, whether it's, you know, Deion Sanders, the guy in New York, Darrell Revis, and you put him on it and you cover him all day long. Is Devon House in that category? No. Is he the best you got? Yes. And so the other thing that would have been nice to maybe see a little bit of a change up is that the other philosophy to be applied, which is you take your best guy, put it on their second best guy, and then you double their best guy. And that probably would have been nice to see at times, because I think it also might have confused the quarterback a little bit, and maybe he is throwing the ball to DeAndre Hopkins thinking that it's going to be singled up one more time, and he makes a throw. And when that throw is made, all of a sudden you've got the second guy coming over to double him who can make an opportunity at making an interception. So, you know, I'm a believer in that, you know, that there's two ways to go about it, and I think that it would have been better served if they had mixed it up.
Why haven't they? I mean, I know you can't read Bob Babich's mind, but I mean, that's his call, I would presume, right? And I think a lot of us have questioned that, like, hey, we all would have seen that. We're not all the same football mind that these coaches are, but it seemed evident to a lot of people. Why do you think that was, that he just felt like that was the best way to go and just was going to stick with it?
Well, I'm not in his mind to find out exactly
what he's
thinking. But I also do know that they have a philosophy on defense that they play fast. And they play fast because they play, I don't want to say simple, because I think simple would have a negative connotation to it, but they play less complex,
straight up,
so that they can play fast.
Yeah, go guard that guy.
And I think that is good at times, but I also think at times, if you don't have the guys that can play it, then maybe you need to change it up.
All right, we got one more. Paul is in Panama City hanging on, so let's get him in before we get to Gus. Paul, go ahead. You're on Jaguars Today.
Yes. Thank you, Tony, Mike, and Jeff. I appreciate taking my call.
Sure.
You kind of answered my question on singling up their second best player and doubling their best player. But with Buffalo coming up and the fact that maybe Tarvin and Watkins might not play, what about doubling up McCoy? And is Bob Babich becoming too, I can't even think of the word right now, but too repetitive? They can almost guess, you know, he's going to be in zone when it's third and long. Yeah, predictable. There we go. Thank you very much. But they're going to be in, you know, quarter zone when it's third and long, so they're going to throw that little screen pass on the weak side where nobody's able to cover and stuff like that. Do you foresee maybe them changing that up, and what else do you think they could possibly do to prevent LeSean McCoy from lighting us up this week?
Well, as far as, you know, you mentioned, you know, because they might have Sammy Watkins and Percy Harvin out, can you double LeSean McCoy? Really, there's not a lot of doubling of a running back that you would want to do anyway.
But wouldn't you could commit an extra guy to the box?
To the box, right. Absolutely.
Did they do that this week? I mean, with Arian Foster really being this probably second biggest threat in the pass game for Houston, what did they do trying to take away Arian Foster in the pass game?
Well, I mean, they played man and they played zone, and the one play that kind of sticks out in my mind. I mean, look, Arian Foster is a great player. He's going to get some catches.
Sure.
You know, he's probably the best receiving option at the running back position maybe in the league. The play that disappointed me the most was the touchdown catch that he had.
Yeah.
You got man coverage, Jonathan Cyprian. You know, a couple weeks ago, he has a fantastic game against Indianapolis, against the Bucks. He had a poor game.
Those games seem to be the fantastic ones are the outliers at this point.
Well, I think that's the one thing, you know, when you talk about, okay, if accountability is the thing, that's, to me, that's an area that you say, hey, look, if it's not consistent, then we got to look elsewhere. And I think at some point that, you know, you look at that, but you also have to consider what your options are. Are your options Sergio Brown? Josh Evans? Well, Josh Evans was playing this past week anyway.
Right.
You know, and then your other guy, James Sample, was hurt, you know, so he didn't play.
When he gets healthy, do you expect him to take a look
absolutely at
that spot?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I've been saying this about James Sample, that I think eventually that he is going to be a starter, and I think that he's going to compete with Cyprian for the strong side position. Because on the touchdown pass, man coverage, Arian Foster, you know, there used to be something called a B over that they used to run, which to simplify it, it's just an angle route. The running back comes out of the backfield. He gives the appearance that he's going to run to the flat. And he plants his foot as he's starting to round his route to go to the flat, plants his foot and comes back and comes right into the middle. And when you're a safety or a linebacker, doesn't matter what the position is that your approach to that needs to be inside out and at the same level. So that if it is the angle route, and when that foot is planted and he's coming back in, you hit him in the mouth. There is no angle route. It's a hello, meet me here on my face. And it doesn't happen. You know, Cyprian is deep, and as Foster is angling to the flat, he's starting to go. Well, when Arian Foster plants his foot and comes back underneath, because he's over the top, there's nothing to obstruct the angle route coming back underneath. You know, and it's not like it's something that's new. I mean, Arian Foster runs that a lot. You know, and so to me, that's a poor play by Jonathan Cyprian. It was a preventable play. And I think as a coach, you say, look, what happened? Why? Well, we rep this in practice. This is something we've seen. We've talked about it. Why didn't you execute? Well, and I think that's one thing that instead of talking about it and trying to analyze it, you analyze the end result, which is the production. And if the production's not there, then you give somebody else an opportunity at getting that production. And I think if Jonathan Cyprian doesn't improve and certain things like that, because, you know, your expectations for Jonathan Cyprian are high. And I'm not saying because he's a second-round pick who was nearly a first-round pick. Expectations are high because that's what you kind of a player you expect him to be. You know, he's capable of it. I mean, look what he did against the Colts. Had a tremendous game. Need to see more of that. And if you can't do it on a consistent basis week in and week out, then we got to give somebody else an opportunity at trying to do that. And that's James Sample.
All right, we got to take a break here with Jeff Logman and Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Coming up, we've got This State in Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. And I promise you, we'll get to Gus Bradley's comments from yesterday. Phone lines will remain open at 641-1010. Likewise, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. You can also weigh in on the fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asking you which position group on the Jags is most in need of improvement as things stand now through six games. It's 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, This Date in Football History.
All right, This Date in Football History brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. On this date, October 20th, 1996. How about this one? Jacksonville wide receiver Keenan McCardell caught 16 passes, tied for the third highest total in NFL history at the time, and the Jags 17-14 loss at St. Louis. Mark Brunell, I believe, threw five interceptions in that game.
I remember that game.
That was a lot of yardage piled up and obviously not translating to a lot of points. 230-something, I want to say, for Keenan on those 16 grabs. Famous birthdays for this date, a bunch of them. 1958, happy 57th to Dave Craig. Long time, kind of a journeyman quarterback, although he played with Seattle for a long time. How many yards would you say Dave Craig threw for in his career? Rough estimate.
Probably 20,000.
Tony?
I was going to say 26.
38,000, over 38,000.
Nice.
Hung around for a long time, you know.
The thing I remember most about Dave Craig was when he was playing for Kansas City. And Kansas City came to New York, and Dave Craig stepped up into the pocket, and that's when Dennis Byrd and Scott Mercer, my two defensive line mates, collided, and that resulted in the broken neck for Dennis Byrd.
Yeah, that's obviously awful. But Craig, over 200 touchdown passing in his career.
Mobile, tough.
Not a bad career for that guy.
No, that's a great career.
Played until he was about 40 years old. Born in this state in 1962. Ray Childress, longtime defensive tackle and defensive end with the Houston Oilers.
Great
five-time
player.
Pro Bowler, by
great
the
way. Player.
Five-time Pro Bowler. Herman Moore, born in this state in 1969, as he was a four-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro.
UVA guy. And, by the way, I remember when I was a senior, he was a redshirt freshman. And don't ask me why he was redshirted, because in practice...
Ready to go.
He used to kill us. I mean, kill us.
Born in the state in 1976, Riedel Anthony, the former Gator and Tampa Bay Buccaneer, turns 39 today. The extra point blocking machine that is Jamie Collins is 26 years old, born in 1989. And Jeremy Hill of the Cincinnati Bengals turns 23 years young today. This date in football brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Re-roofs, repairs in your home, your place of business. If it has to do with roofing and you've got a concern, call Bob Roberts so you don't have that concern. 287-7756, license number CCC056797 for First Coast Roofing. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Tennessee Titans quarterback Marcus Mariota suffered what is being reported as a grade 2 MCL sprain to his left knee as a result of the hit he took from Dolphins defensive end Olivier Vernon on Sunday. The injury is one that is usually deemed a 4 to 5 week injury as far as recovery. Mariota left the game on Sunday briefly, but did return and finish the second half. Head coach Ken Whisenhunt said that Mariota was moving around fine and that Zach Mettenberger would take whatever reps Mariota may not be able to in practice. His status going forward is still unclear. The NFL Network has issued an apology after a locker room interview following the Bengals win on Sunday, including completely naked players going to and from the showers behind the interview in that locker room. Worst of all, it wasn't even a live segment. It was taped. So not only did Albert Breer, who conducted the interview with Adam Jones, not notice, but the person or persons filming didn't notice. And then the whole line of people it had to go through at NFL Network to finally hit the air didn't notice either, as they were showing raw locker room footage.
Raw is inexcusable.
Correct. Yeah.
Raw is correct. How do you take such a wide shot in the locker room to begin with if you're the cameraman? That was a failure on many levels.
And then the reaction when it came back to the studio. Oh, that was interesting.
Who was the guy? One of the Bengals was pretty ticked off about it. And
I think it was Whitworth.
Andrew Whitworth.
It was, all right. And he was saying that, you know, he felt like, you know, forget, it's not about women in the locker room, it's about people in the locker room to him. You know, look, it's a unique place of business. I know what he's saying. This is my office. What other place would have you come in various states of undress? Well, sports are different than a lot of things. Maybe there needs to be a longer cooling off period after games, or at least to give guys time. What do you think, Logs? Is the setup appropriate the way it is right now, or do you understand what Andrew Whitworth is saying?
I mean, I understand what he's saying, but at the same time, I think each team needs to establish, you know, because you have lockers and then you have showers, and player has to get undressed, obviously, from his locker to get to the shower. You know, Whitworth probably could have utilized a little better tact, and that when he does get undressed, he has a wrap or something around him to be able to get to that shower so that he's not completely naked, and or, you know, give the players more time before the interview process begins. You know, but I mean, it's, you know, look, it's been going on forever. There's been complaints forever, you know, and there will be complaints on one side of the fence or the other based on which way you try to move it.
All right, let's move on from that and get back to the Jags here and through the words of Gus Bradley. After a day to collect his thoughts, watch the film a little bit, here's what he opened up his press conference with yesterday.
Very challenging time that we're going through right now. I think a lot of things are taking place as far as, you know, going through offense, defense, special teams. I think we're at a stage, you know, I told the team today that, you know, four out of five of the games we played have been one possession games, as you look at it. And I think there's another one where we were in the fourth quarter up 14-10. We're in that stage where we've got to find a way to pull these off. And I think, you know, I believe in the guys in the locker room. I think that's important that they believe in each other, and they do. And I think that we're going to use that to help us. But we've got to strain even more. We've got to ask, they got to ask even more of themselves as we do as coaches, ask more of each other, and then that accountability factor. But, you know, going through this, you knew this was going to be challenging. To teach this team what it takes to get through this and do enough right things to earn that victory.
How does the accountability factor translate, Jeff? When you say these guys have to have greater accountability, right, for the mistakes they're making, what does that mean? Just owning the mistakes, saying, hey, that was on me, that was my bad, or is there a repercussion in terms of playing time, or what? What is, how does accountability manifest itself with a football team?
Well, I think accountability has to come from the coaching staff, and it comes a couple different ways. One, it's spoken. Two, the play time gets changed, and the ultimate accountability is job. You know, if you can't do it, then we're going to find somebody else to do it. I mean, there's so many different ways to hold a player accountable. You know, so that to me is something that is, I'm sure, is happening, but it also has to be demanded, and it has to, every time that it's not, every time that it's not met or reached, then the next step is taken, which means what's the next step in accountability? Play time? Okay, then if that needs to be done, then that's what needs to be done. Is it losing a job and then elevating a practice squad guy from your own, or finding somebody else from another practice squad? Then that needs to be done.
What happens when you are, and I'm not using any specific example here, but I'm sure this happens, you watch guys in practice all throughout the offseason, preseason, 6 weeks of the regular season, and you say, oh, this guy's not doing it right, but he's still the best option that we have, right? Do you think coaches sometimes find themselves in that unenviable position? What do you do in that position? Well, do you sometimes say we got to make a change regardless, even if we don't know if that next guy is up to it?
Well, that's the hard part. You know, I mean, you can put your finger on the reasons why, but getting the solution and getting it changed is harder, because it's not like you can change the parts out and then have an immediately better option available to you. Many times people say, well, you know, let so-and-so do it, or let somebody else try it. Well, I mean, you've got a lot of material to look at to evaluate what your options are. In a lot of cases, your options aren't better. You know, so that's the challenging part, is if the options that are there to make a change aren't better, then how do you make the performance get better without making a change?
Right.
That's the challenging part.
All right, as a follow-up to those opening comments, Ryan O'Halloran asked this, and he said to Gus that, you know, the part about teaching this team how to win sounded a lot like what he was saying in 2013, and Ryan said, asked Gus if he was surprised that the winning hasn't caught on yet. Here's what Gus had to say.
I think the difference is that, you know, when you're up for, I think it was 14-10 with 11 minutes to go, and but they scored a touchdown. And we didn't play tight enough coverage as we needed to. We come back offensively, we get the ball, and 17-yard gain, 18-yard gain, could have been first and 10 on the 44. Instead, it's a holding call, brings us back to the 16-yard line, and we don't convert on a third down. We punt it. They get 16 yards off a return, puts them in good field position, and then they catch on a third and three, a 27-yard touchdown pass. And then we throw a pick. So in 3 minutes and 30 seconds, they scored 21 points, all in that frame in the fourth quarter. That's the part where, you know, I think we've got to teach our team that when you've got the lead, you know, now you even go more, you know, and if there is such a thing, I should say. But I think that you, instead of dipping your toe in the water, you get immersed in it. And that's what we need to learn.
I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm not quite sure what that means at the very end. I mean, when you talk about a holding penalty mm-hmm. that calls back a 16-yard gain, would it set him up? What do you do to go more in that circumstance? You know what I mean? I mean, nobody wants to get a penalty on him, obviously. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like I can understand if it's just a simple mental error and you lined up improperly. That's unacceptable. But holding happens, right?
Sure.
Sometimes you're trying to protect your quarterback.
Well, you overcome it. You overcome it because on that drive you had a 3rd and 9 in which you had Allen Robinson. I don't know if you remember the play or not. It was right on the Jaguar sideline, and it was versus cover 2. And Allen runs kind of wasn't a sluggo, but it's kind of an angle route to where he's outside. He angles in, plants his foot, and then he bends it back to the sideline, and he's right between the safety in the corner, and that's what they call the soft spot of cover 2, and Blake just misses him. Now, was the route right where it needed to be? Because, you know, it's a timing throw. You know, you got to be able to have it, you know, because it's a long throw. It has to be thrown on time. You know, was the route right where it needed to be? But they didn't connect. You know, I mean, so there was an opportunity on that drive to overcome the holding call on a 3rd and 9 if you connect on that to Allen Robinson.
But is that a case of Blake not knowing how to finish or not know how to win yet? Or is that a case of Blake is sometimes less than 60% passer, and he's going to have these times when he misses guys, whether it's that situation or whether it's in the middle of the first quarter?
Yeah, I don't know what you can say that it is. I mean, is it youth? Is it an experience? Is it repetition? Either way, it needs to be made.
I understand, you know, that, but when Gus says, the team needs to learn how to finish and learn how to win. Is that a part? I mean, how do you learn how to do something until you do something?
Well, I think what he's trying to emphasize, because, you know, I think the hardest thing for me to learn when I came into the league is realizing that it's such a long game. And when I say it's a long game, is that every play takes on such a great importance, and that you have to be able to be focused and really timed in to everything that you're doing for every single play. You know, if you've got 60 snaps, being good on 50 is not good enough. You know, you've got to be good on 59 out of the 60. You might have one bad error that, you know, physically sometimes you get beat.
What do you attribute that to, though? I mean, is that talent level? Is that lack of focus?
I think it can be everything. I think it can be youth. I think it can be inexperience. I think it can be the quality of the player. I think it can be the quality of the coaching. It can be a wide range of things. But that's something that this team needs to find. Otherwise, accountability starts coming into play. And accountability, ultimately, is that jobs will be lost.
I asked you what accountability is. Here's what Gus, he was asked the same thing yesterday, and here's his response to what is accountability.
What is accountability? To me, accountability is changing someone's behavior. You know, it's not if putting a hammer down changes someone's behavior, then put the hammer down. Ultimately, what we're after is changing behavior, changing the way if a person's doing the wrong procedure, let's change it. However that needs to be done, I think we'd all agree at that. And so that's why you got to understand your players and know what they're all about. If I told Puzz I was going to fine him $5, he would straighten up. If I told someone else I'm going to fine him $5, they may not. Everybody's different. So you got to find out what they value and what's important to them. And hopefully it's this team, and I'm sure it is. And there's other things personally that you can use. But once you find out what they value, it's easier for accountability to take effect.
What do you make of that?
I think he's right. I mean, and what he's talking about is holding players accountable without having to make a change because, most coaches will say, you know what, player's not getting it done, we're going to make a change. Well, if you've got no options that are going to be better, that the player that you want to hold accountable is your best option, and you know he's capable of more, you need to find a way of what makes him tick to get him to play better. I mean, that's a coach's job, is to get to maximize a player's ability, and that needs to be accomplished.
Are they falling short in that area? Obviously, they're falling short results on the scoreboard, mm-hmm. but are they falling short in the area of?
Well, right now, yes.
Figuring out,
they're 1-5.
I mean,
that's easy to be able to say that now. Is that going to be the case throughout the season? We'll find out, you know, because ultimately the accountability is going to fall on Gus and Dave. You know, so at 1-5, are they where they need to be? No, but they've got to find a way to get there. And will they get there? I don't know. We're going to find out.
Right, obviously. But I guess what I'm I'm trying to be a little bit more specific. Excuse me. Are you surprised that six games into the season and spending an off season with at least most of these guys, even if they're new to the team, that they're still obviously not finding all the right buttons to push? Like they don't, or maybe even if you push the right buttons, you try a different combination. Ultimately, does this land on the players or does this land on the coaching staff in terms of finding a way to get the players to elevate their level?
Well, it falls on everybody. You know, and I kind of, I'm not saying that this team is comparable to what we went through in 1996, but I remember 1996, it felt a lot like this. You know, 1996, you know, we had a very young team, a lot of new components that we acquired in free agency in 96. And there was a lot of questions about Tom Coughlin. There was a lot of questions about the players in that locker room. And even though we were a relatively new franchise, the noise was pretty loud, even in 96, because we weren't playing very well. And it feels like that. Now, will it? I'm not saying that this team's going to go on a roll and get into the playoffs like we did in 96. But it's going to go one way or the other. Either it's going to get better or it's going to get worse. And that's how it felt in 96. And I remember that just that distinct moment. I mean, there was meetings between players and owner. There was conversations with owner and management. There was questions about the coach. The coach was coming in the locker room trying to maximize and hold players accountable. It was very similar to 1996 at that moment. And then we started to play better. And maybe we were too young and dumb to realize, you know, the magnitude or the scope of it in 96, but it just kind of happened. And there's nothing that this team has issue-wise that can't be solved by winning. Winning cures everything. And I'm not saying it hides everything, but it certainly cures a lot of what ails you when you're in the situation that you're in right now, and this team needs a win. I'm not worried about victory. Okay, this team needs a win, period, to be able to get better. I'm talking psychologically, on the field, for the fan base, for the owner, for the coach, everybody. They need a win.
All right, we got to take a timeout. Phone lines are loaded. Hang on the line, and we will get to you next, 641-1010. If you want to jump in with Jeff Loggeman, the professor, every Tuesday here with us at Logs56 on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Today's question of the day asking you which position group is in the most need of improving their play so far this season. It's a Tuesday brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Tuesday's here on Jaguars Today, brought to you by the law offices of Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Loggeman here with you live at EverBank. Phone lines loaded up, so let's get out to them. 641-1010. We'll start with Mike on the west side next up on 1010XL. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Fat Tony, Demps, and Loggeman. How y'all doing this morning?
We're good, man. Thank you.
All right. I'm a 20-year season ticket holder, man, and I have, you know, some points to make, but I don't want to rant, you know, just to be ranting. My point is this. As a fan, we often hear about the lack of talent or not quite having, you know, this guy, that guy, but you have to look at who's assessing this talent, because this is the same group of guys that assessed the running back in Baltimore as a fourth or fifth string running back. This is the same group of guys that let Darryl Smith go and kept Puz Lesnar. I have nothing against Puz, and I think he's a hell of a guy against the run, but against the pass, he's a liability. You guys wouldn't disagree with that, would you? All right.
Well, I would agree with you on Darryl Smith. I mean, I think they totally messed that up. The Justin Forsett thing. You know, they brought him in here to be a player, you know, and then Justin Forsett got injured, so it's not like they evaluated him to be a fourth or fifth guy. He just came here and he got hurt. They brought him in here to play.
What else, Mike? Go ahead, finish your point. Is that it?
When we talk about the lack of talent, we've watched too many guys that have been deemed not Del Rio guy, not Gus's guy, but go on to other teams and contribute. And it's nothing against these guys. They may be great guys, but we need, as Gus, I mean, Shad Khan needs to make whatever it needs to be done, bring in a guy that's a proven coach to get some more direction and guidance. We're tired of the learning curve that it requires for these guys that's never been coaches to assess talent, you brought in a numerous amount of guys here, and you picked this 53-man roster. And then to get in the middle of the season, the first half of the season, you already saying, well, these guys aren't picking this up and picking that up. You're looking at guys that have been here 2-3 years already, and they're still making the same mistakes, taking bad angles to the ball, bad tackling, no locking up. I mean, and for him to be a defensive guy, the one thing as a fan that I was excited about was what we were seeing in Seattle with the tackling and with the aggressiveness on defense, and we're just not seeing that through scheme or whatever. If you're not getting it with your front four, then blitz with your linebackers and your safeties. But don't just sit back there and let guys like the 40-year-old quarterback, like this guy Hoyer, and like some of these other quarterbacks coming up is going to do to us. They're going to carve us up if we continue to just sit back there and take it. Thank you for your time, guys.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. I'm sure the Jags appreciate, excuse me, you being a 20-year season ticket holder as well. It sounded to me, it was interesting, because it sounded to me like he wanted to replace the coach, but he was complaining more about the job that Dave Caldwell's doing. Did you get that? I mean, it sounded like Mike's issue was with personnel.
I think it was both. I think, you know, Mike's clearly upset and wants things to be different. And that's the beauty of being a fan. It's passion. You know, you care about your team, you care about your city, and you care about, you know, how they perform. And look, I get it. I mean, I get the disappointment, you know, and I understand that you're 20-year season ticket holder. I mean, so am I.
Sure. I mean, that's fine. Let me ask you, you look back, it's tough to judge this draft class, right? They just had it.
That's early.
Go back to the first draft class.
Your top guy is you know, an IR.
I understand. So forget this draft class. Go back to 2013, right? Mm-hmm. The first draft. Two plus seasons removed. How good a job do you think was done? Jokel has been okay, hasn't been great. Mm-hmm. Ciprian looks like he's going in the wrong direction. Grotz, drafted you think to be a starter, not a starter. Ace Sanders already gone. I mean, Denard is a solid pick. I'm mm-hmm. sure I'm forgetting a few. I know they got Demetrius McCray late in that draft as well. But how was the talent evaluation?
It wasn't great. What was it, Anza that was available, you know, in hindsight?
Anza could have been there, yeah.
I mean, hindsight's always look. It's easy to evaluate drafts and kind of to reflect back. You know, I think Luke Jokel has gotten much better this year. I think that he is going to be a solid starting left tackle. Can he be a franchise left tackle? I'm not willing to say that yet because he hasn't proven that yet, but he's gotten better. Jonathan Ciprian kind of in the same boat in that, you know, my criticism of him earlier and that he needs to take the next step. I mean, there's no question that if you look at that first draft class, it's not perfect. And will it be better? It needs to start showing that it's going to be better. There's no doubt to that.
All right, let's get to Charlie on the south side next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Charlie.
Hey, this is Jaguar Charlie. I just want to know if Devon House got some butter with that toast that DeAndre Hopkins served them Sunday.
I think he prefers margarine.
Is he a parquet?
Yeah. All right, thank you, Charlie.
Charlie wanted to get his one-liner.
Yeah,
we've already addressed House. I mean, certainly he allowed some plays, played pretty well for about three quarters of that game against Hopkins.
Yeah, played really well for about three quarters, and then, you know, DeAndre Hopkins was DeAndre Hopkins.
Right, and as you point out, maybe they should have given him some help at a certain point in time. I'm not hanging that whole thing on. Look at Hopkins, look at the last four games he's had. Very simple, with the exception of the touchdowns.
100 yards plus every game.
Two touchdowns, 150-ish every game. And, you know, 8 to 10 receptions pretty much every game. He's become that guy in the National Football League. I'm not saying House had a bad fourth quarter. You know, there's no getting around it. But there are people that the tendency, and we heard it immediately after the game, get House out of here. And I'm like, wow, three quarters was pretty good.
Yeah.
And what's your better option that you're going to turn to? What's your alternative? So that's something we talked about a lot this morning. Let's get, is it Chris up next on the south side? Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hey, appreciate you taking my call. The question I wanted to ask is, you guys were talking about accountability earlier. Did Dave Caldwell and upper management, do they bring in 5-6 players every single week like some of the other teams do? I know Tuesday is a typical day off. Usually teams bring in about 4 or 5 players. to do workouts, you know, as their emergency board. And then you have players in and out of the, you know, doing their lists and stuff. They see other players working out, the team's working out, letting them know, hey, you're constantly always under the microscope, always under evaluation. Do they do that? Do they bring in those players?
Sure. Sure, absolutely. I don't know the numbers that they bring in. And I think each team is different. I think that when they bring players in, it's not reported like a lot of other places where it is reported which players are coming in. Trust me when I say this is that they are very thorough in evaluating not only the players that can come in and work out, but they're also evaluating the players on other rosters. They're evaluating players that are on other practice squads. As they have done for the last 2 years. I think this year is a little, they've treated this year a little bit different. And at the first 2 years, they were always willing to, as they said, to improve the bottom end of the roster. And I think that they're of the opinion now, and rightfully so in some cases, that the bottom of their roster is probably as good as what they could get out on the street. And I would disagree in some cases. There was a player that I think the Carolina Panthers was able to acquire off of the Washington Redskins practice squad, Ryan Dallaire, who had a really nice game when the Carolina ended up playing Tampa Bay. He's a Leo-type player. I think he was fairly productive against Seattle this past week. I mean, that was a guy that I would have liked to have seen them bring in. But the chances of finding somebody that's available or on the street now that could walk in the door and make an impact at this point are not great.
All right, let's get one more in before we break, and that's Alan in Mandarin. You're next up on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, Alan.
Hey, Mike. Alan Levitt. How are you doing?
I wanted to give
you a call to tell Logs one thing and then ask him a question. I got so sick and tired of that CBS announcing crew the other day, I couldn't stand the mistakes they kept making. Obviously, it's their rookie crew. So I turned over to listen to you and Frank and Vaselli, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, you guys do a pretty good job. I mean, it's very well coordinated and well in sync. So I just wanted to compliment you on that.
That's a great job.
I appreciate that. And where in the hell have you been?
So
why have you waited so long?
That's a great question. But I have a tough time dealing with a sync because you all have instant access to the play, and then you know TV is delayed. But you're right. That's a valid question. Here's my other question. A 6'5 quarterback gets many, many block passes, but I know it's not just him. I'm wondering, just from your evaluation of the play study, are our offensive linemen not knocking the defensive ends, the hands, the trees, if you will? Are they not knocking them down? Are the receivers
This past week, I know that it kind of is a little bit more glaring. I know J.J. Watt had a batted pass.
Made a pretty good career
out of that. Which I think that was like his 42nd career pass defensed, which is just ridiculous. I mean, nobody has that type of number. You know, but I think if you looked at the quarterbacks in the National Football League, Blake Bortles would not be anywhere near the top in the number of batted passes that he's had. Now, Chad Henne's a different story. Chad Henne is historically one of the highest in batted passes, and Blake has better pocket presence to be able to find the opening as opposed to Chad Henne. You know, so that's not like a trend, or that's not a trait of Blake to where he gets passes defensed or anything of that nature. For the most part, he's been pretty good.
All right, let's take a timeout, Alan. Thank you for the call, and we will come back. We'll see if we have time for a few more on the other side. We'll look at the fan feedback spotlight today as well, asking you which position group is in most need of improvement for this team through six games. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you on a Tuesday, brought to you by the law offices of Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars Today continues in a moment, live from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
He played, I think, 21 plays, something like that. So I thought he did. It was very good for him and the team, I think, to be out there. And, you know, we'll take a look at it. I think we put him in different spots and how we wanted to utilize him. So hopefully his reps continue to grow.
That's Gus Bradley yesterday talking about Cindric Marks. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars today here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Logs, you put on the tape. What did you see from Cindric?
I mean, he was actually it was a good first game for Cindric. You can still tell, though, that he's not using that leg as far as a lot of times he kind of drags it and he doesn't plant with the knee bent with power. And that's typical. It takes time to get to that point. You know, but Cindric is kind of crafty athletic, and it's very, very unique skill set that he has. And I think that he had probably two impactful plays that I saw where he penetrated one time, came down the line of scrimmage, made a nice tackle from behind on Arian Foster. He had another one where he drew a holding call, and on that holding call, he would have ran right through it, you know, being the Cindric Marks of old, you know, and he still would have drawn the call, but he would have been able to make maybe the play. I think that, you know, that 6 weeks into the season is kind of what I expected. And I think I said that back in training camp, that I think it's going to be a while before he gets in. And I still think that this is going to be a work in progress. I think 20-25 snaps a game will probably be his high water mark throughout the rest of the season. I think that he can contribute, but I don't think that he's going to be a guy that's going to be impactful like he was last year. I'm hoping that he does, but the expectation for me is not that he's going to be a high-level player this year.
All right, let's go to the phones, get a couple calls in here. Was it yesterday we had Leo and Tyler thought it was Theo, so I'm interested
to see if
he got this one right.
Rolling the dice.
Ridges is next up on Jaguar State. Is that correct? Is that your name, Ridges?
Regis, like Regis and Kathleen.
Regis. Wow. All right. I had a feeling the first one wasn't right. All right, Regis, what can we do for you?
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question about why don't they jam the wide receivers a little bit more? Like, the firehouse was out there on the island, but I felt he could have jammed Hopkins a little bit, like, especially during the first half when they had to kick that punt, and they had him pinned within the on the 1 yard line, and they threw the ball to Hopkins on the third down, and House should have jammed him at the line. And also during the touchdown play, he should have jammed him at the line then. And he lost track of him, and they scored a touchdown in the second half. Just want to see what you guys think about that.
It's one of those things, I think, when you play DeAndre Hopkins, is that if you jam at the line of scrimmage, you can do that when you've got over the top help. Because when you do jam, you run the risk of missing, and then a guy with the speed of DeAndre Hopkins, all of a sudden, he's by you and you don't even have a chance. And I think that Devon was smart, and that typically he wasn't trying to jam right at the line of scrimmage, but he was trying to get his hands on him within the legal 5 yard rule. You know, so when you play a great player like that who's pretty crafty and who does have a good release, sometimes that's not the scouting report. Some other guys, though, that is the scouting report. They're not as quick. They don't have great moves off the line, get up in their face and jam them, because they don't have the speed to be able to blow by you, and they don't have the moves at the line of scrimmage to beat the jam. But DeAndre Hopkins has got the moves to beat the jam, and he's got the speed to beat you over the top. So you're kind of playing with poison if you try to jam him, and you're going to have to cover him 50 yards down the field.
All right, there you go, Regis. Thank you for the call. Let's get Memphis Mac in. I'm pretty sure he got that one right. Hey, Mac, how are you?
Doing good, Mike. Thanks for taking the call, Jeff and Tony, too. Nice to speak to you. Here, the topic in hand is what area needs to be addressed. Man, I'm telling you, I watched J.J. Watt just completely exhausted, giving it 150%. We all know he's that type player. I don't see that type of effort out of our defensive line. Now, Jeff, you being a defensive lineman, I understand efforts there, but I'm talking about balls out, you know, and earlier a caller said hair on fire. I think it's getting to that stage, man. I mean, somebody's got to step up on that defensive line and make a statement. I'll take your comments off the air.
Thanks, Mac.
I totally agree that you need to see more of that, but J.J. Watt's a special player. It's hard to see what you see out of J.J. Watt. Roy Miller is a guy that plays extremely hard, play in and play out. I think Avery Jones has been playing pretty hard. I think you need to see more. You know, Michael Bennett's been given great effort. You need to see more out of him still. You need to see more certainly out of Chris Clemens. You need to see more out of Jared Odrick. My expectations for Jared Odrick are much higher than what I have been seeing so far.
We're sitting there watching him lose his mind on whatever injustice occurred, you know, when the Jags had forced a punt and they got him off the field before he got a flag. And we're just like, just bring that to the table the next series of downs, right? I mean, I understand you got to play to a degree under control, but you can play a degree out of control too, right? I mean,
sure.
Right? There's a line to walk. All right, last one. We'll get in. We'll look at the fan feedback spotlight, which, by the way, D-line ran away with the fan feedback spotlight today.
Yeah, they did.
But let's get James in here before we close up shop. Good morning, James. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. I'm the caller that called in last week, and Mr. Loggeman said I was dumb. And I haven't been called dumb since the fifth grade, but I did some thinking, and I thought to myself, you know, I told my wife and kids before we went to the game, you know, Mr. Loggeman said that we're better than this. So I was pretty fired up about going down to the stadium this weekend, and what I saw was the same thing I saw when I traveled to Tampa Bay, a terrible team. I love them. I support them. But what is the metric of success for the Jaguars? I think that's where I may be missing it. To me, it's wins and losses. It's the only inarguable fact. There's excuses for everything, but if it's not wins and losses, what is it? This isn't the YMCA. This is a bad football team, and they're not going anywhere, and they don't look better. I don't know why that's even up for argument. I'll hang up and listen, and thank you, guys.
Thank you for the call, James. How do you address that?
Well, first and foremost, if I called you dumb and not your comments dumb, I apologize. I shouldn't have done that, first and foremost. And number two, I would disagree with you that it's the same thing you saw this past week as you did in Tampa Bay. I thought it was worse. I do. I thought that they weren't as good this past week as they were against Tampa Bay in some categories. And that was disappointing to me. I thought that this week was a small step back. And there's no question that the metrics are wins and losses. You know, I disagree with a lot of people in that, you know, a lot of times people want to put, you know, years one and year two as far as grading out, you know, where this regime is at. And I think that the way that they did it, it would be very difficult to grade them year one, year two, and year three. Now, there's no question that year three, when you're at 1-5, that's the metric. And you are what you are. You're 1-5. And that's not good enough. And that is the metric. That's how you get measured. That's how ultimately you get held accountable as a head coach and as a general manager and as an organization. And right now they're not measuring up. Now, there's still games to be played. Where will they be after 16? You know, that's why I hesitate, you know, in a lot of instances to have strong commentary because, you know, there's still something to be played for. There's still things to be measured. There's still things to be evaluated. And when I say it's hard to look at a team's record at 1-4 or 1-5 or 1-3 at that point is saying, okay, you're just looking at just the record. They only have one win. I think there are steps to be taken with a team, and I think that they were taking steps up until this past game, and I think the steps were a little bit of a step back. I think the turnovers on offense was a step back. I think the lack of production on third down, which continued, was a step back. And I think the lack of to being able to overcome a momentum swing in a game was a step back. Now, I'm not saying they're huge step backs, but they were step backs, and that needs to change.
All right, let me quickly give you a look at the fan feedback spotlight here, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships, asking which position group needs the most improvement in their play. And like we said, it's a runaway for the D-line. Joshua went with D-line. These are some of the Facebook responses. Jamie went with the O-line and the running game. Steve went with the O-line or the D-line. We're getting our A kicked on both fronts, he said. Chris Brown went with the defensive line. Dustin went with the D-line. Steve Perkins went with the D-line. Bill went with the D-line. John went with the front office. Bob went with is obviously the D-line. Andrew said pass rush, defensive end, Leo, and let's see, Damon said the D-line needs massive improvement. That seemed like a pretty much a runaway. Tony, likewise, similar sentiment we got on Twitter today.
Oh, yeah, it was all the same kind
pretty
of stuff.
Much,
people
right.
reacting on Twitter basically saying the defensive line, and if it wasn't defensive line, honestly, it was either head coach or front office. That's where people are still pointing the crosshairs right now, and it's understandable to have that feeling. The frustration is very real out there for the fan base right now.
Well, but it's everywhere, though. I mean, you know, it's not like you just, you know, you got to spread responsibility. I mean, the defensive line clearly is not performing. I mean, a year ago we were like, wow, the number of sacks that they're getting is very impressive. And they've got essentially the same guys with the exception of a healthy Sendarek Mark.
Yeah.
But you've added Jared Odrick, you know, okay, so you're like, okay, and you added Michael Bennett, that's a change, so you would think that they could at least, you know, measure up. I think one thing that is a little bit differently is that the way that teams are approaching them, whereas last year teams knew that this offense couldn't score any points, you know, starting five rookies on the offense, they weren't scared, you know, they weren't scared at all. And so they played a little bit more conservatively. And this year, it's the teams are playing them different. They're worried that the Jaguars offense can score points. And so they're being a little bit more open, I think, on offense and throwing the football.
I'll end with this from the always fun at Bortles Facts
yes.
on Twitter. Blake Bortles Facts says, unrelated but worth noting, Blake Bortles is undefeated on five continents. So hang your hat on that one, ladies and gentlemen. Loggy, safe travels to Europe this weekend.